Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darusha Wayne. For more information, go to darusha.ca/weapons. Episode 2, Chapter 3. Dex was reading over his notes on the LOS case when the ancient black bakelite telephone on his desk sounded. The ring startled him, and he swung his feet down to the floor as he leaned toward the instrument. He lifted the receiver off the cradle to end the pealing noise, but didn't bother to put the object up to his ear. The phone was another of Annabelle's touches, and Dex found it amusing enough that he didn't turn it off. However, all the thing did was replace the soft ping of Dex's own personal messaging system, and he answered the voice call by silently subvocalizing, "This is Dex. Go." "Be a genie," the rough voice at the other end of the call said. "How's your evening going?" "It's barely afternoon by my watch, Renee," Dex said. "I've hardly started my day. How are things in your patch?" "Oh, you know," the other man said, a lilt to his voice. "A policeman's work is never done, right, my friend?" "I don't know anything about that," Dex said, laughing at his friend's choice of words. "But I'm not sitting here twiddling my thumbs, if that's what you mean." "I do not know how they do things back in America, what with this twiddling you speak of," Renee said. "But you must be entitled to a break from the salt mines at some time, am I correct?" "Indeed you are, sir," Dex said. "You wouldn't happen to be heading to La Retro, would you?" "The great detective at work," Renee said, laughing. "Shall I see you in 30 minutes? "Only if I don't see you first, Biagini," Dex answered, and ended the call. Dex linked out of his office and found himself sitting in his small apartment in the dark. The sun had gone down, and he hadn't bothered to set his system to turn on the lights automatically. He got the illumination going and stood up, then rotated his neck, working all the kinks out. He'd been online for a couple of hours and hadn't stopped to move or get a drink of water. His mouth was dry and filmed with a nasty taste. He drew a glass of water and drank it down while pacing his small space. He checked his appearance out in the small mirror in the lab and determined that it would have to do. His hair was cropped close to his skull, setting off his dark skin and eyes, which he thought looked a little tired, but passable. He'd showered after getting home from Annabelle's that afternoon, and while a few hours in the chair hadn't done anything too great for his shirt, the silky material failed to hold any wrinkles and still looked presentable enough. Certainly, he didn't need to get dressed up just to meet Renee Biagini at their local watering hole. Dex left his apartment and spiraled down the 18 floors to the lobby of the complex. He walked through the courtyard, and even though it was early evening, he was surprised to see none of his neighbors in the small green space. There were usually some people around at all times of day or night, and there were still some people out on the street. He walked down the road for a couple of blocks, then caught a local train to the Pieton. He walked into the open-air bar at La Retro, and saw his friend at a small table near the back. Dex walked over to the man, who stood and came around the table. They embraced quickly and sat across from each other. "So, what is going on across the pond, my friend?" Biagini asked after they had each ordered drinks from the automatic menu scrolling across the tabletop. "You probably know more than I do, Renee," Dex said. "I don't pay that much attention to what's going on the streets now that they aren't my streets, you know." "Understandable," Biagini said. "So why not just make it official and move over here professionally? There's always room on the squad for detective, Dex." A fashionable-looking human server arrived with their drinks. Synth wine for Biagini and rum and water for Dex. Biagini winked at the pale, long-haired server, who smiled in return. "You know each other?" Dex asked when the server had gone. Not yet, the other man said with a sly smile. You are such a cad, Dex said, lifting his glass in a toast to the other man. Just making the most of my meager time on this planet, Biagini said, taking a sip of his drink. And don't change the subject. What is it with you people? Dex said. Everyone seems to want to poach me away from Captain Zhang these days. You're a popular man, Biagini said. For no small reason, either. He turned on his thousand-watt grin, and Dex rolled his eyes. I'm not going to fall for your flattery, Biagini, Dex said, and his friend laughed. So, who is my rival? Biagini asked. Larson, that lieutenant from M-City Squad. Biagini said. They don't have detectives on that patch, do they? No, Dex said, and I'm not about to be the first, either. Fair enough, Biagini said. But why not come over to my house? You do live here, after all. I'm sure you're a great captain, Dex said, and there's nothing wrong with the Nice squad, but I've got a home with Zizu's team. I like it there, and I don't want to move. Moving house, quitting the workaday world, and going full-time freelance has been tough enough. I need a little stability, Renee, at least for a while. Fine, fine, Biagini said, smiling. I just want you to know that there's always a spot for you on my squad. I'd be happy to have you on the team, Dex. You're a good man. Thanks, Renee. It means a lot to hear you say that. I'm just not ready to make the move yet. I know. I just want to keep asking in case you change your mind someday. I don't want to miss out. Tex laughed. I don't think you miss out on much, Renee. I try not to, my friend. I try not to. They sat for a moment, sipping their drinks. Renee flipped through the menu and ordered a small bowl of salad. It's real food here, isn't it? Dex asked. Fresh from the hydroponic garden on the roof, Biagini said. Celebrating something? Dex asked, looking at the price out of the corner of his eye, his eyebrows raising. Nothing special, Biagini said. I'm just in the mood for something wonderful. You know that sufficiently advanced food is indistinguishable from magic. Dex laughed. You are a very strange man, Rene Biagini. Thank you very much, he answered, smiling. The server arrived again with Rene's salad and another pair of drinks. Dex eyeballed the unordered rum and water placed before him and said, I'm still on the clock, you know. Last one, then, Biagini said before lifting a forkful of greens into his mouth. He chewed slowly, with his eyes closed, and sighed loudly after swallowing. Magnifique, he said, smiling broadly. Say what? Dex asked. It's French, Renee said. I'm taking a class. Whatever for? Dex asked, laughing. Who cares about a dead language? It's energizing for the mind, Biagini said haughtily. He took another bite of the salad, then sipped his wine. I met a woman once who spoke French, Dex said, finishing off his first rum. Really? Biagini asked. Yep, Dex said. Had an accent and everything. Apparently her parents were quite strange and brought her up with it as a first language. Caused her no end of problems as a child, I imagine. Indeed, Biagini said. So what's on the go for you these days? Someone desecrated a church in Felipe Gates. Where? Biagini asked, a tiny bit of green shooting from his mouth. A neighborhood in M-City, Dex explained. Mostly clubhouses and libraries around there. I can see why you'd never have heard of it, he chided his friend. Well, I certainly would not be likely to be in an area full of religious zealots, Biagini said with a scowl. That's not my style at all. Mine neither, Dex said, laughing. But they still don't deserve to have their space crapped on. Someone defecated on this church? Biagini asked, his eyes wide. No, not literally, Dex said. They just tore the place up some, changed all the textures and a bunch of the objects. Sounds like a commoner garden variety act of vandalism to me, Biagini said. A friend of mine had his shop fucked with just last week. They broke the locks, destroyed the door, and wrecked the inside. It took him days to fix it. Shit, Dex said. Biagini nodded. And these aren't isolated incidents. Overall, the numbers say vandalism in M-City is on the rise all over. Really? Dex inquired. Let me see. Biagini took on the 1,000-meter stare people get when they are accessing online information. Up 11% in the last quarter overall, and 38% in the high-risk areas. Dex whistled. That's a big jump, he said. Any idea what's behind it? Biagini shrugged. Your friend Larson has a whole unit working on some kind of extortion ring making the rounds in M-City. But my friend Jeffy didn't get any threats or anything, so what would be the point? Extortion? Sure, the old protection money racket, Biagini said. It's probably a couple of script kiddies who watch too many old mob vids trying the shakedown route, not some major organized crime ring, but who knows. You don't think it was extortion on your friend, though? Nah, Biagini said. Jeffy thought it was probably a jealous ex-leper, but he's just a narcissist. Really, who knows why people are assholes, he said philosophically and went back to his dwindling pile of greens. The city nightlife was already in full swing when Dex said farewell to Renee, after a promise to meet again the next week. It was a nice night, warm without being hot, and Dex decided to take the long walk back to his apartment. When he arrived, he saw a group of his neighbors in the courtyard of his building. A few people were just enjoying the small decorative garden, but the majority were engaged in upryznyeye, a popular exercise regime that reminded Dex of trying to tie yourself in knots while fighting invisible sloths. People seemed to like it, though, and he often saw groups in the yard or on the squares in town making the synchronized moves. He spiraled up the lift to his floor and back to his apartment. He unlocked the door with a wave of his hand, the embedded identity chip under his skin electronically handshaking with his apartment system. Once inside, he drew a large glass of water and pulled out a fruit brick from the economy-sized box in his small cupboard. He peeled off the wrapper and took a big bite of the glutinous lump. Chewing, he walked the two steps to his small pull-down table and sat in the one chair in the tiny room. His apartment was very small, containing only a bed, the chair, and a small storage cubicle in the main room. A zapper and recyclotron were inset into one wall, next to the small lav. On the opposite wall, a 4-decimeter shelf could be pulled down to fashion a table or desk area. When it was down, there was barely enough room for the large comfortable chair which dominated the space. It was ideal for one person, but became immediately cramped with another body in the space. It was one of the reasons that Dex stayed over at Annabelle's much more often than she visited him. With his water and late lunch, Dex sat at his small table and leaned back into his chair. He lost focus and let the overlay of his systems viewer impose itself over his vision. He could still see his apartment in the background of the icons and images of the interface. He paged over to his account in the cubicle man's system and checked to see what was new in the past 24 hours. He scanned the news board and checked his private messages. His personal system automatically set a reminder for the weekly squad meeting in a couple of days, and he checked to see if anything had miraculously been added to the light of the simulacrum file by another officer. As he'd expected, the file hadn't been touched, except for a log entry showing that it had been accessed by Lieutenant Larson. Dex sighed as he paged out of the organization's system and linked into his office in M-City. There was no particular reason why he should be virtually present there in order to work, other than it was a location where it was becoming known that he could be found by the few clients who came to him specifically. However, Dex discovered that he liked the interface that Annabelle had created for him in the office, and it appealed to his anachronistic aesthetic sense. As he gazed out his artificial window at a constructed image, he wondered if Annabelle's embrace of all things virtual was rubbing off on him. His desk was cluttered with files. There were papers, pictures, and vids which represented themselves as 3-dimensional hollows covering the horizontal surface, and Dex was seemingly randomly picking through them. He wasn't even really seeing the files any longer. It was more like some kind of meditational activity to keep his virtual body moving while his mind turned over the facts of the LOS case. He was so completely lost in thought that at first he didn't hear the light knocking on his glass door. It was only when the sultry voice outside called, "Mr. Dexter, are you in?" that Dex realized that he possibly had a client. She opened the door, and Dex had to fight to ensure that his avatar didn't betray the reaction his body had in the physical world. She was tall, almost filling the doorway vertically, wearing a pale green tailored skirt suit, which was calculated to show off her voluptuous body extremely well. Her lips were bright red, a shade darker than the pillbox hat perched atop the not-quite-black chignon of her hair. Dex's gaze was drawn to those lips, as they drew into a smile that filled him with a complex soup of emotions. "Mr. Dexter," she said, taking a step into his small office. "We meet again." Chapter 4 "Ms. Bish," Dex said as he struggled to get his feet off his desk, tidy up the mess, sand and smooth his tie without falling over. "It's been a long time." He reached across the desk to take her gloved hand in his. The handshake felt more like a caress than he'd hoped it would, and he forced himself not to jerk his hand out of her grasp. "Too long, Mr. Dexter," she purred, her smile piercing Dex's resolve. "Indeed," he said, unconvincingly. He gestured at the hard wooden chair on her side of the desk. "Please, have a seat." She settled on the chair lightly, the fabric of her skirt riding up on creamy thighs which Dex failed to avoid noticing. Forcing his eyes to meet hers, Dex leaned back in his chair. "To what do I owe the pleasure of your visit?" he asked. Stella Bish crossed her legs slowly, and Dex reminded himself that the dame was as calculating as any computer program, even though he was well aware that she was a flesh-and-blood woman. "Business, Mr. Dexter," she replied. "I assume by the lettering on your door that you are still engaged in investigations of a, shall we say, less-than-corporate nature?"
"I'm available for discreet inquiries," Dex said.
Her lips curled into a not entirely unattractive smirk. "I seem to recall that your idea of discretion includes barging into a crowded cafe and accusing people of murder in front of their friends and colleagues," Bish countered. Dex felt his face flush in the physical world, but his avatar played it cool and merely shrugged.
"I do what I need to in order to get results, Ms. Bish," he said. "I'm sure you can appreciate that."
"Indeed, Mr. Dexter," she answered. "Results are exactly why I chose to come to you directly, rather than share my little situation with strangers."
"We are not exactly bosom friends, Miss Bish," Dex said, smirking himself.
"Mr. Dexter," Bish said, her voice sounding shocked. "It pains me to hear you say such a thing. I think we have more in common than you'd like to admit. After all, I understand that we share excellent taste in accommodations, do we not?"
Dex did not know what to say to that. He shouldn't have been surprised that a woman like Stella Bish, who ran the empire which brokered the best freelance programmers and designers in M-City, and had business fingers in more pies than he could count, would know the names of all her tenants in the buildings she owned. Because Stella Bish wasn't just a high-powered mogul who had made Dex's life very difficult in the past. She was also his landlord.
"I haven't noticed you in the common areas of Liberté," Dex said after he got over his surprise.
"I still live in Guadalajara," Bish said. "I'm hoping that the community at Liberté will be successful enough to build a sister complex in my own hometown."
"And how's that going?" Dex asked. Bish smiled and said nothing, so Dex answered his own question.
"I suspect well enough. The buildings are getting full, and there are always people around, doing things. I'm sure your goals, financial and otherwise, are being met well enough."
"I couldn't do it without people like you," Bish said.
"True enough," Dex said.
"And speaking of which, what brings you to people like me? You have a situation, you said. Could you be a little more specific?"
"Of course," Bish said, her manner instantly becoming all business. "I'm not sure exactly how to describe it, so I'll just begin at the beginning."
"That's usually a good place to start," Dex said, making sure that he would have enough clear disk space to record the conversation. "Go ahead."
"Well," Bish said, "it started a couple of weeks ago. I was linking into a meeting in Market Street, and when I rezzed in, I found myself nowhere near where I was trying to go."
"Oh?" Dex prompted, wondering how that was even possible. Links to locations in M-City were hard-coded to force an avatar to emerge in a particular location. There was no other way to enter the virtual world than by a link. From what he understood from Annabelle, links were like the doors into the world. Doors which were fixed by the programming of the virtual world itself. You couldn't change or break an existing link. At least, that was how Dex thought it worked.
"Yes, it was very disturbing," Bish continued. "I think I was in some unused corner of the space. I don't know if you've ever been in an empty part of M-City, but I've visited a few unrezzed locations as the preliminary to a large construction project. They've always been represented as just a gray 3D grid. But this wasn't even as well-formed as those spaces."
"How so?" Dex asked.
"I found myself sort of floating in a space I can only describe as a void," she said. "I had no sense of how large it was, no idea if I was alone or merely blind. It was very distressing, and I'm most thankful that I was able to link back out of there immediately." Bish looked visibly shaken by the memory, and Dex was surprised to discover that her discomfort did not amuse him in the least.
He opened the lower right corner drawer in his desk and withdrew a bottle of whiskey with about a third missing from it. He found a pair of short tumblers in the back of the drawer and poured two generous measures of the brown liquid. He passed one glass over to Bish and said, "This will provide any of the usual stims, just pick from the list." He watched as Bish paused, presumably checking the menu of neurostimulants available. The stims would affect her brain directly, the dosage regulated by her avatar's action of drinking from the glass. Something in the list would surely be to her taste, and calming her down would make the interview go easier. Dex, on the other hand, drank his whiskey for the simulated taste of it only, never having grown to enjoy the strange sensation of direct electrical stimulation of his central nervous system, calculated, monitored, and constantly adjusted by his implants. She took a long sip of her drink and closed her eyes. A moment later, she took a deep breath and said, "Thank you," toasting Dex with her glass. After that happened, I immediately called my best technician to check my system. We ran a series of diagnostics. It took days to clear the list, and I was completely incapacitated the whole time. "Why's that?" Dex asked. "Lila wouldn't let me enter M-City until the full diagnostic had run."
"Lila?"
"Lila Avalon," Bish explained. "Probably the best M-City interface jockey in any world, at least since Reuben Cobalt." Dex looked up at Bish sharply, the name of the man whose murder had first introduced them ringing in his ears. "I can't say that the similarities hadn't escaped me," Bish said, bitterness in her voice. "I never did hear about how the case resolved. The grapevine made it sound like you identified the culprit, but I could never find anyone who knew who it was." "I doubt you ever will," Dex said, "but I can assure you that the person responsible for Reuben Cobalt's death is very unlikely to be behind what happened to you." "Perhaps," Bish said, "but it did make me think of you nonetheless." "What did Ms. Avalon find?" Dex asked, changing the subject. "Nothing," Bish said. "She could find nothing wrong in my system, nothing wrong with the location in M-City I was trying to reach, nothing at all. She ran several sets of scans, some of which were surprisingly painful, I might add, to no avail at all. I fear that she eventually came to believe that I was hallucinating the entire experience, and she cleared me to travel interdimensionally again." She took a sip of her drink and cleared her throat. "As I'm sure you can appreciate, I was apprehensive the first time I tried to link into M-City after this. I was terrified that I would be stuck in some no-man's land with no way to link out again. At least I can say that it hasn't happened again." "I'm pleased to hear that," Dex said, "but that begs the question. Why come to see me now?" "It's because of all the other little things," Bish said.
"Oh?" he prompted.
"I'm not making this up, Mr. Dexter," Bish said darkly. "I did not suggest that you were," he said. "Please, just tell me what's been happening." Bish sighed and drained her drink. "At first I was sure I was just imagining it myself," she began. "You know, that I was so confused by what had happened, or that I'd just forgotten what the details of some places were like. Or maybe the creators had changed them since I was gone. I was offline for nearly a week for the tests. It was possible. But, as you know, I spend time offline regularly, and this hadn't ever happened before, so that seemed unlikely." Dex waited, hoping she would start making sense at some point soon. "The first thing I noticed was in my office," she continued. "Like you, I keep a virtual office in M-City, though there is very little similarity between my space and yours, I must admit." She smiled slightly, and Dex made sure to keep his avatar's expression neutral. "What about your office?" he prompted. "There's this pattern in the floor," she said. "It's barely noticeable, and I'm sure I've never even really looked at it before. But I was convinced that it was different. I couldn't even tell you what was different about it. It just seemed wrong." Dex nodded and said, "Anything else?" "Yes," Bish said, "a lot of other things, very much like that. Subtle changes to the places I frequent, so subtle that it is hard to explain what the difference is." "Anything more immediate?" Dex asked, "like the experience with the broken link." "No," Bish said, "that only ever happened the one time. I was starting to think that I really was just imagining it all." She picked up her glass and examined it. Dex lifted the bottle toward her, offering her a refill, but she shook her head and put the glass back down on the desk in front of her. "But yesterday, I knew that I wasn't imagining anything, and that I might be in real danger." "Go on," Dex said, leaning forward a little. "I'd been offline for a while," Bish said. "You know, one of my little holidays from virtuality." Dex knew that Bish, like he himself, strongly preferred the physical world to life in M-City, which was part of the reason why she'd built the housing community in Nice where he now lived. When I reconnected my system to the net, I couldn't get in. Dex frowned. "Were you trying to run a multi?" he asked, referring to the practice some people had of creating entirely separate identities for use online. The conglomerate of firms which maintained the Everywhere Net, the global business and personal communication system which was also the backbone of M-City, had a policy of deleting multi-accounts without prejudice. They claimed that the possibility of fraud was the issue, though most believed that it was a concern for additional bandwidth usage that prompted the ban. Regardless, running a multi was one of the online activities that was closest to illegal, and Dex knew that in most circles, he was being offensive by even asking the question. Bish did not bat an eye at the question, however. "No," she answered simply. "I don't have a multi-account. It was just me, my regular login, my regular account." "So what happened?" Dex asked. "Nothing," Bish said. "And that was the problem." Dex thought for a moment. "Well," he said, "you're here now. What happened?" "That's the real problem," Bish said. "I have no idea what happened. Yesterday I couldn't access anything. No M-City, no messages, no boards. It was as if my connection was just gone. I couldn't even contact anyone. I was starting to panic. My business was in real jeopardy. I was starting to try to see if I could find anyone in Guadalajara who might be able to help me when all of a sudden everything just started working again. And it's been fine ever since. But I can't go on with these things happening all the time. So, here I am. After your experience with the Reuben Cobalt incident, I thought of you first." "I'm desperate, Mr. Dexter," Bish said, and Dex could hear true fear under the usual seductive tones of the woman's voice. "Please help me. I've nowhere else to turn." You've been listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darusha Wayne. For more information about this and the other Anderson Dexter stories, please visit darusha.ca/dex. The theme music is First We Take Manhattan, performed by Donovan Alex and Yoko Rocks. More information at soundcloud.com/donovan-alex. Thanks for listening.